one of the questions we've asked everybody is sort of how they got into the field. And I noticed that on your website, you actually have a very interesting essay on that very point.
Yeah, it's been pretty well, I wrote it for undergraduates, and but it's been pretty widely read.
Right.
I came to Harvard here as an undergraduate with my advisor first said to me, he was a Thomist philosopher, where did you get this idolatry of science? Because I was taking this one course, chemistry B, and I walked out, I said, that man's intelligent. How did he know I have an idolatry of science? But I do. Mm-hmm. And I think I'd like to be a part of it. But I was a major in English and philosophy, and I went to work for a company, associated with our family business, and spent 11 years as a chemist, a practical chemist, formulating cell screenings. And I was pretty good at it. But it gave me two kinds of experience. One, I learned that there's such a thing as being right or wrong. Mm-hmm. And if you spray a panel with a coating that you hope will last outdoors and you come back 6 months later and it's all cracked up, you know you're wrong. You may not know why.
Right.
But it gave you a sense there is such a thing as, gave me a sense of knowing that there's a reality out there that can prove you're right or wrong. And I think that's different from a number of my colleagues who spent their lives in the university and have never been tested mm-hmm. that way. And when I decided to leave that field, it was because it didn't have the generality. I couldn't publish any of my results, so I thought I was pretty good at what I was doing. And so I went back to this field of linguistics, and I remember writing an essay, a notebook full of notes, essays for an experimental science, and I found that the whole field consisted of very bright people arguing with each other vigorously about interesting questions, but the data was entirely their own reactions or what they got in a book, or formal elicitations from people. And all around me I saw people walking and talking, and it occurred to me that we could build a science based upon the actual data from everyday life. And that's what I tried to do, and I think it's still a minor part of linguistics, but it's had some continuity. And so the whole idea is that you want to be tested by the world and find out with hard data whether you're right or wrong. And so that's one part of it. Now, that also involved the quantification, because mm-hmm. there's so yes. much variation in everyday life, so we had to introduce mathematical tools. And another way to look at it is that this part of linguistics, at least dealing with change and variation, has become a quantitative study with a number of fairly sophisticated tools, though I don't think it's possible for all of linguistics to become quantitative mm-hmm. because that's not likely. But we have now the 34th annual meeting of the meeting on new ways of analyzing variation, and it's become a major part of the field. Now, it just so happened that the second big research project I got funded for was from the Office of Education. We were trying to answer the question, is there any connection between the reading difficulties, reading failure in the inner cities and the difference in language between black and white population? So I got involved in that enterprise. And some very interesting results about the difference in black and white, and show that African-American English, as we now call it, is a very different system and very systematic. But we didn't actually succeed in improving reading levels. Instead, we developed a whole line of scientific work, which the work on African-American English is now a very large part. But we keep returning to the question, can we use our knowledge to change and improve the world? And since I'm interested in language change and variation, I've done studies in a number of areas to show how language is changing. It became natural to ask, is there any, what are the practical applications of this kind of work? And immediately you can see that speech recognition is an area that seemed important. A little bit that I knew about it, I knew that the problem for speaker-independent recognition, the big problem was dialect diversity. And gradually we've gotten a stronger and stronger hold on this topic, so now we're just publishing this Atlas of North American English, which covers all of North America for the first time. And what we found and continued to continued the earlier findings is that linguistic change is very active and increasing diversity is the rule rather than convergence. So that the dialects of North America are more different from each other than they ever were.